just as water. If you don't stir it, it will become clear. In the same manner, the nature mind is such. If you do not alter, but leave it naturally, it will find its true essence.
The situation here is not like in the East. They are not so much held or constrained by the culture and certain traditions.
The reason that Buddhism would rekindle its fire in the West was that the Western people would come to it without having any sort of routine.
I think that is actually, it's a wonderful thing also, in some ways, that if this was brought in a good way, it would actually inspire a kind of a new non-sectarian, or you could say remake.
It's really a very unique occurrence in the history of Buddhism that so many different traditions from different cultures and different societies are meeting together, talking with one another. This is a unique time in the history of Buddhism. I think we're seeing the beginning of an emergence of a Western Buddhism.
Of course, that Buddhism will adapt to the West, but it's very important how it develops. It has to develop organically, not something that kind of, you know, not a quick fix. You understand?
The Thai teachers that I was with, or the Burmese, really would have very little contact with Japanese Zen masters or Tibetan Rinpoches. Like, each culture was quite isolated in terms of Buddhist interaction. What's happening in the West is that these traditions are coming to the West, they're meeting, the teachers are talking with one another, the practitioners are practicing, often in several traditions.
Traditionally, you have all the time in the world. So you can sit in and meditate for years together. But in today's world, we have to pay our bills.
I think since West is where they're very much into form and, you know, just making things manifest, like this film, for example, I think maybe there may come a time where these teachings may take on. Perhaps in the East was less in the form, but maybe in the West it may become more in expressions of maybe a direct form of social action, benefiting beings. Actually, it may become more kind of actual visible forms it may take on.
I agree with His Holiness the Dalai Lama that it is also not necessary for many people to formally become Buddhists. If people are Christians or humanists or Jews or Muslims, whatever they are, they would want to be better Christians, Jews or Muslims. And if they use this shovel, you know, the meditation shovel, the wisdom shovel, the ethics shovel, and they can improve on how good a Christian they are, how good a person they are, it's not necessary to become Buddhist. Some people may wish to, and they should be free to, but it's not the primary thing, it's just to shift membership.
Sometimes I'm kind of quite really shocked to see that perhaps I'm one of the last generation of teachers who have been trained in Tibet. And so there are fewer and fewer of us.
For example, in the University of Amsterdam, there should be 5 chairs of Buddhism, you know, studying Buddhism. And not like theology, just talking about faith or making people Buddhist, but Buddhist psychology, Buddhist philosophy, you know. When people read Plato, or when they read, they don't become worshippers of Apollo. When they read Aquinas, or they read Nietzsche, they don't become necessarily existentialists. But, you know, there's an idea of studying a philosophy to just use it like a tool to think better. And that's how Buddhism should be taught in university, I think.
Buddhism today is totally different than the view of Buddhism in the past decades ago. You know why? Because of the scientific developments. It's so funny. It needed Einstein to show up in the West to say, hey, what Buddha said was correct.
So that what really death teaches us is, in a sense, is central to, or rather put it this way, is central to spirituality. It's a way of really purifying our mind and really seeing what's important and giving us really the more life's value. So death is, in many ways, the greatest teaching.